Welcome to Parents' Perspective. All right, class, Mrs. James began. We're going to begin our unit on Mexico today, and we're going to choose teams to cover our different topics. Let's look at the choices on the boards. The fourth graders turned their attention to a large sheet of colored paper on the bulletin board. We have climate, industry, government, crops, history, topography, and noteworthy people. Who'd like to choose first? Hands went up around the room as the students signed up for their choices. Nearly all the groups were filled when Mrs. James noticed Brendan sitting quietly at his desk, doodling on his notebook cover. Brendan, she coaxed him gently, wouldn't you like to choose a topic? You can see there are still a few teams with openings. Brendan replied absentmindedly. I was just thinking, what about Mexico's art? Good idea. Mrs. James added art to the list of topics and printed Brendan's name underneath it. Anyone else want to work on art with Brendan? From a parent's perspective, how can we, and should we, encourage schools to teach to our children's strengths? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest today is an educator and an author who herself struggled in high school. Jennifer Fox has 25 years of experience as a teacher and administrator in a wide variety of settings and is currently president of the Purnell School in Pottersville, New Jersey, a pre-collegiate boarding school for girls utilizing the Strengths-Based Affinities Program. As a student, Jennifer overcame her own educational challenges by seeking and developing her own strengths. To share what she has learned through the years, she has written Your Child's Strengths. Discover them, develop them, use them. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me.
In your book, Your Child's Strengths, Discover Them, Develop Them, Use Them, you talk about a child's strengths relative to school, falling into three different categories. Would you explain?
Yes, I've come up with three kinds of strengths. Activity strengths, those are the things that you do that energize you. See, a strength is a verb. It's how you feel engaged when you're doing something. Then there are relationship strengths. Those are the things that you do for and with other people that make you feel proud or give you a good feeling. And then there are learning strengths, and those are the ways that each of us learn to have optimal learning experiences.
As we understand it, your premise is that in a school setting, a child's strengths can be further developed. Can you explain how a teacher can help foster a child's relationship strengths?
Yes. Well, first of all, you have to believe that in each child there's something that they can contribute to a relationship. And unfortunately, sometimes we think there's kids who just don't fit in or they're misfits. So if you can help that child find that one place where they're able to make a contribution, then that really works. Let me give you an example. Sometimes there's kids in class who the teachers call the class clown. Well, if you look really closely at this, that is a child who's acting on something that's a natural inclination for them. And that activity can be channeled into a good contribution in class. So maybe every time they do something in class that needs a leader and needs a little bit of entertainment, that child can be called upon to be the spokesperson or give a little show or something. And that way, instead of being dumbed down and that strength that they bring being looked at as a weakness or a deficit, it's turned into something that can be used as an asset.
Well, how do you deal with a class clown in other times when you can't make him in charge, like in math class or something?
Well, oftentimes you have to look and see how that child best learns. Now, the example that you gave in your story, which I loved, is that unfortunately sometimes we look at content and topics as the thing that we put out there for kids to get involved in. If you have to pick something, it's hard for kids to pick topics if there's things that they want to do with the topic. So, for example, art is drawing or writing or clay or painting. Those are the subcategories. So the class clown has energy. The class clown wants to be involved in doing tasks. So as teachers can find different tasks for people to be engaged in, those are the ways that kids will channel their energies.
Jennifer, this indicates then that a teacher really needs to get to know each child personally, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. The first thing about developing strengths is that kids need a sense of feeling that they belong somewhere. And that is what schools really need to do. There's an exercise that schools do that's really great that I heard of last night when I was talking at a school And the teacher said, we get all of the teachers to write down names of the kids, and then they have to put an X by every child that they know. And then at the end, we see the several children who nobody knows in the school. And invariably, these are the ones who don't do well in the school.
Isn't that interesting? So what recommendations would you give for educators in a place like a high school where you have hordes of kids coming in for each class and then they're out, and so teachers have maybe 100 kids that they interact with? How can they get to know these kids?
Teachers say we have to correct all these papers, we have to do all of these assignments. And what I think they can do is, in the questions that they ask students and the things they want them to write about, ask some questions about who they are. So when they're reading, they're having to discover that. Kids really want adults, parents, and teachers to know who they are. See, developing your strength is about developing that thing that makes you unique. It makes you exceptional. We really need to find out what's exceptional in children today, because that's the contribution they're going to make. That's going to be their lasting impression that they leave on this world.
It's interesting. I remember an exercise that I saw done for kids learning to read and write, all the way up through kids in college. Now, I was an English teacher, so I saw it in English, but I assume it can be transposed to any subject, and that is, at some point, writing a letter to the teacher.
Yeah.
And the subject could be anything, but the idea was there was a letter that was going to the teacher, and there was a response from the teacher, so there was a written communication that took place.
You know, education, I really think, is a transaction that happens between people. It happens between a student and a teacher, or a parent and a teacher, or even two adults. It's what goes on between them. And unfortunately, what happens in our schools today, and I don't blame the teachers for this, I think it's really a systemic problem, is that we blame the children when there's not learning happening. All the blame goes on the children. And it's not fair. We have this thing called learning disabilities. In fact, the school where I'm the head of the school is for kids who have these quote-unquote learning disabilities. And I don't think that there's a learning disability. I think if there's going to be a learning disability, there's also a teaching disability. And that's not to say that I'm bashing teachers. I love teachers. I think to be a teacher is a great honor and a gift to the world, and we need more really good teachers. But that said, it's really something that happens between two parties. And so I think that as we look to developing strengths in kids, we also have to look to developing teachers' strengths and to see how they can best teach kids. And one thing on top of that is, we assume that because someone loves to learn, which is a strength in and of itself, I'm a learner, that they're able to teach as well. And that's not always the case. Mm-hmm. And because teachers love to learn math doesn't necessarily mean they can teach it. Now, there's many great math teachers out there, but it's not always a transferable skill or strength.
Lots of times you see that, especially at the college level.
Yes.
You see the real experts, the real scholars who can't communicate with students.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on supporting a child's strengths in school.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Jennifer Fox about supporting a child's strengths in school.
How can a parent ensure that a teacher is aware of our child's strengths? You're especially dealing with children who have been labeled learning disabled, so I would imagine that's even more important for those parents.
I think it's equally as important for those kids as very talented kids, and I would like to talk about that because the method is the same. Talented kids are expected to be talented at everything. So we have these things called honor rolls and GPA awards assemblies for when you're really great at everything. Having talent is wonderful, and having talent in many areas is really wonderful. But unless children know what to do with that, unless they know where to channel it, they have just this thing I call unspecified achievement disorder. They don't know where to put it. They just know they have to be good, and they just know they have to get to the next level, but they don't really feel like they have a contribution to make. So the thing about developing strengths is it works for kids who are less abled in that paradigm, as well as the most talented kids, because it's all about finding what your exceptional contribution is going to be. And how parents can help teachers discover that, because it has to be between the two, is in Your Child's Strengths, I have a workbook for parents to work on with their kids to develop what their strengths are. And there's a million suggestions about how to find out what their preferences and choices are and the things that they feel naturally inclined toward. And then what I recommend is that parents go in, and when they go to conferences with teachers, they go in with an agenda. And they spend time, as much time with the teacher who the kid is doing the best in as they do with the class that the child is struggling in. And they make the teachers aware of what they see at home, and they get a dialogue going. But I also wrote this book as a tool. I recommend that parents give the book to teachers as an end-of-the-year gift and say, read this over the summer, and then come back and let's talk about what you think my child's strengths are, and I'll come and tell you what they think they are. Teachers don't like to be confronted with angry parents. So I think if you can approach things as, this is a gift to you as a teacher, I think all teachers want to help kids succeed. And so parents do as well. So if they can use it as a dialogue starter, that's really the first step.
I remember when my kids were in high school having conferences with the teachers. We were fortunate enough to be able to have a setup where we had a conference with every single teacher, which mm-hmm. was very nice. That was unusual, I know. But I remember going in and at the beginning telling the teachers a little bit about my child, what he liked to do at home, what his hobbies were, what his passions were. And the teachers were all very grateful for just that little bit of information, because that allowed them to see the child as a whole person and to get a sense of how that child was stimulated. And I saw it year after year across the board, no matter what the age of the kid was, no matter where he was in school, and this is for each of several different children, that the teachers were just happy to have that little bit of information, and that went a long way.
And that's the responsibility of the parents. Parents can't just send their children to any school without taking some responsibility for their job as a parent.
Well, I really believe the future of education is going to rest in the parent, the teacher, the child needs to be involved in that equation too. Mm-hmm. I love conferences where the children are allowed to go. It's not some secret meeting about them. It's about their future. They should be involved in talking about it. But I also think the community should be involved in education, even when people don't have kids. Because I really think that the future of our democracy depends on us preparing kids to live in a democratic society. And everybody has a stake in that.
How would you get the community involved?
Well, mm-hmm. I've developed a program called the Affinities Program, and it's outlined in the appendix of Your Child's Strengths. There's several activities in it. Remember the traditional career day where you bring in a doctor, a lawyer, and they all talk about their careers? Well, now in this program I have, kids go out into jobs and they see what it's really like to be in a working environment. I mean, how many kids have been into a studio like this to see what a radio station's like? Businesses and organizations can open up their places to kids coming in and seeing what it's like. The other thing that we do, though, is at the end of the 4 years of high school, kids have these things called presentations of learning, and they present to a panel of people, community people, not parents, not teachers, but people from the community. They present what they've learned and how they've enacted their strengths in all those three areas to assist and facilitate their learning. And the people sit on these panels and encourage them and coach them and give them feedback. That way the community comes into the school, sees what kids are doing, and supports the learning process there.
It's a huge difference from the communities where people complain, we pay these high taxes for these public schools and we don't have any children in the schools.
Right.
So what involvement is there for us?
Right.
How would you adapt that model that you're talking about, which is obviously a very small model, to a large community with a lot of students?
Well, I think the larger the community, the better for this kind of activity, because there's so many more opportunities and so many more different organizations that can be involved. I think that schools need to have point people, and I think that will work with the community, but there's so many parents out there who want to come in and who want to have roles in schools, and that schools don't really know how to keep them busy and active in ways that are not sort of in their hair, and yet they're able to be doing something valuable. So I would say that you get parents from the community who want to take these roles on.
I think you might be able to find parents who have jobs outside the home who would be willing to work with a community who are not willing to be room mothers or bake cupcakes for the PTA.
That's right. There's another activity in the Affinities program where kids interview potential bosses, which is kind of the opposite of what they think they should be doing. But they make an inventory of what relationship strengths they would need in the kind of person they would work for. And then they go out and interview potential bosses. And the people they go interview, they're not hiring them for a real job. But that's another way to get the community involved. And it takes a half hour a week to be able to do this. It's a community service that you could do. So that's one of the ideas as well.
Are there techniques that you advocate that are different for elementary, middle, and high school teachers to bring out the strengths of their students?
Yes, but I would like to answer this question based on what parents can do. And the reason is because I've developed real curriculum for teachers that they can use. So there's a program for younger kids called Strengths Now, and there's a program for older kids called the Affinities Program. And those are really curricular programs that can be used in schools, and they can look and see what those are. And they can find information on that on the website at strengthsmovement.com. But parents actually at home can do many things that are different for different kids. To find out what your strengths are, you have to be able to have some sense of self-reflection. So young kids can't self-reflect as well as older kids. So what parents can do is really help them through that. Parents keep books on young kids about the first time that they did certain things, and they keep them in a baby book. Well, they can keep observations about what their children do that are different. They can observe their children in play, and they can record the kinds of characters they make up. They can record the kinds of roles that they take on when having imaginative play. And these are clues into what their natural inclinations are. And they can write these things down and hand them to their children when they're old enough to reflect and look back. I'll tell you one funny little story. There was a man who was a radio interviewer, and he interviewed me several weeks ago. And he said to me, "Oh, I so was excited to interview you because I had this exercise when I was a kid where I went out of my classroom and we came back in and the teacher had overturned all the desks and all the books and everything and said, now you have to write a story about what happened." And he wrote a news story. And he said, at 10:45, Miss Jones asked us to go out on the playground. And when we came back in, there was, and the teacher just failed him for this story he wrote because she wanted him to write an imaginative story. So he went home crying that day, and his mother wrote down this whole story in this book that this had happened. Well, later when he went to college and was cleaning out his room to go to college, he pulled out this book and read this story and said, "This is so interesting to me. I knew back then that I wanted to be a reporter." Yet it was so funny because his teacher had actually failed him on the assignment. But it's really a gift to be able to point out the things that make your kids different, that differentiate them from other people. These are often clues into what they can become.
And even something as simple as just watching a small child play. I noticed it with my kids. I'm sure parents notice it with their kids all the time. One of my kids liked to play with batteries and wires and those kinds of things. Well, he grew up to work in the sciences. Another child absolutely needed to write things all the time, and he grew up to be a writer. It's very interesting just to watch kids play, even at a more basic level than that.
The writer is the one who was going abroad and said, "I don't need a camera, Mom. I'm going to write it all down."
Oh, good for him. Now, with middle school kids, one of the things that you can do is give them chores to do at home, but don't tell them what to do. Let them pick from a variety. So if there are 10 chores to do, let them choose which one they like to do and then ask them why they would like to do this one. Now, they probably don't like doing any of them, they'll say, but if they can choose between the lesser evils, then that's an inclination into activities they would like to do as well.
Well, and the one who wants to bargain for how much it's going to cost.
There you go.
Could be a future attorney.
That's right. That's right. There's little clues in all of these things.
We're talking a lot about children's strengths. How can a school help to reduce a child's weaknesses?
It depends on how you define a weakness. Mm-hmm. I think a strength, as I said before, is a thing that energizes you. So the opposite of a strength would be an activity that depletes you. I think it's very important to look for children to find out which activities deplete them. And not that they have a past from doing them, but the more you engage people in activities that they feel energized by, the more successful they're going to be. Therefore, it's about time, and it's about balance. Unfortunately, we look at weakness in education as the place where you're not academically performing. And we have this thing called a scorecard. And there's A's and B's and C's, and usually the grades that the kids are doing the weakest and the poorest in, parents make them focus most of their time. actually pulling away sometimes the things that they love to do in order to focus on that area. But what we know about developing muscles is the more time you spend developing the muscle, the stronger it gets. It works the same way with weakness. The more time you spend in an area of depletion, the more depleted you get. And unfortunately, this transfers over to other areas. So if you're bad in math and you have to spend all your time trying to get better in math, then what happens is that spills over to all the other areas and you might actually do poorer in the areas where you show success.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on supporting a child's strengths in school.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Jennifer Fox about supporting a child's strengths in school.
So what happens to the child, to just take your example, who's bad in math?
I actually don't think that kids have to be excellent in everything. And so I think that what you have to do is decide how far you want them to go. Do you want this C to be an A? Usually that's not going to happen. So when does it get detrimental? There's certain classes kids have to pass to graduate. I believe every child should learn to read, write, and speak, and do basic arithmetic. I strongly believe that. But engaging kids in real, meaningful work is really different than forcing them to get scores on a test. This is a very complex argument and one that I can't argue in this time frame. However, I really think that if you take it seriously, that there's only so much time in the day, and if you spend all the time trying to do the thing that weakens you, you're really pulling away from the place where you're going to probably end up making your living.
Well, except if you've got a child who needs help in a subject. I mean, we'll just stay on math for a minute because it's so easy to do.
Right. But, when we need help.
That's right. But assume for a minute you've got a child who has a weakness, who needs help in order to bring him up to a level that's clearly a better functioning level. So with your program in mind, how does that work?
I think that there's several things. Within learning strengths, kids learn things in different ways. And many kids learn, and many schools are adapting programs where they learn math hands-on. Girls tend to learn math through narrative forms, story forms. I want to know the story of math. And yet teachers sometimes just teach solve the problem, solve the problem, solve the problem. And the reason that a lot of teachers do that in math especially is it's easy for them. It's very difficult for somebody who's really good at something to figure out how someone who doesn't understand it can learn it. And so I think the more that we involve kids' learning strengths in a variety of different ways in the classroom, the more they're going to learn more quickly. But then at the end of the day, I really think, especially with math, there's some kids who aren't going to go into math, and there's some kids who don't have to learn all the math that we have to teach them.
I think learning those kinds of things in school, teach you to think, teach you to learn. I don't think I ever thought I was going to go into math. I remember the worst thing I ever had to do was take a statistics course in college. It was a torturous experience for me, but it was a requirement, and I had to do it as a future teacher. But I learned a lot about thinking in the process of taking it. I didn't do very well in it, but I got through it.
Right. Well, I think that wouldn't it be great if you could learn about thinking in something that you actually really like to think about? And I'm not saying kids shouldn't learn math. I'm just saying that the way that we privilege some of these subjects and make everybody have to learn them to the expense of balancing time out with the things they can do, that's where there's a problem. I am not saying do not focus on things where you have challenges. What I'm saying is save some time over for focusing on what the strengths are and figure out what those are and nurture those.
How have students in your strengths-based programs fared when they've graduated and gone on to college or career?
Well, I love this question because these are kids who were told, some of them, that they'll never go to college. And all of the students who graduate from our school go to college. And what's very important about that is this. When parents get very upset and say, my kid has a D and such, they're never going to get into college. That's just not true. Our kids get into college. Some have had poor grades in the past, and they come halfway through high school. And many of them have extremely low standardized test scores. There is a college for every child who wants to go to college. Unfortunately, every child can't afford to go to college, and that's the problem I'm not here to solve. And I wish I could, but I can't. But there is a college that every child can go to and get into, and that is really important to know. And our girls go to college, and they do quite well, and they are able to find their passions, which is so important, and they are able to find lives that they love to lead. And I go around the country and see graduates from this school everywhere, and they're happy and healthy, and they attribute all of this to their experiences at the Purnell School. It's really wonderful. And a lot of critics say, well, that's great because it's a private school and it's so small. That's just not true. What we know is that what works in these schools works in every school. And it's very important that people start to know that you can't just keep saying, well, we're too big, we're too this, we're too that. You have to start to embrace some of these concepts because they work.
And what's wonderful is that there are a lot of different ways to go at making your child's strengths available to the child and to the teacher.
That's right. Many, many, many ways.
Well, unfortunately, we have to close. But before we do, in addition to your book, Your Child's Strengths, Discover Them, Develop Them, Use Them, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who would like to explore some of these issues further?
Well, two separate different issues. The strengths finding is important, and the Gallup Association has little tests kids can take called Strengths Explorer, and they can find that online through the Gallup Association. And then today I was actually at a meeting where they have come out with a new report from the Forum for Democracy in Education, and it's called the Report of the Forum for Democracy in Education. There's a website for teachers and parents that have a lot of resources on the website called www.strengthsmovement.com.
Well, Jennifer Fox, thank you very much for being with us. Obviously, we have learned a lot about supporting and discovering our children's strengths.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Your Child's Strengths, Discover Them, Develop Them, Use Them by Jennifer Fox. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 369 and tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from our listeners. Our sound engineer is Drew Chapp. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.